Welcome to the Golden Hills Podcast Daily, where you can spend a few minutes each day with us to meditate on God's Word. Now, here's today's encouraging message.
Welcome to this episode of the Golden Hills Podcast. I'm your host, Vinny, and today we're in our summer series called Processing. The last 3 months have been a unique experience in our world's history, and the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic have impacted everyone on earth in one way or another. Today, we want to have a dialogue with a few members of our church who are also teachers. So welcome to the show, Jolene Foster, Josh Call, and Julius Ojewale. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Jolene's muted. Hey. Yeah. The joys of Zoom. So thanks, guys, for jumping on and sharing some of your summer break with us and our community. Just to intro, because not everyone knows everyone, but let's just go and share a little bit about what you do as a teacher. All three of you are public school teachers, but in different schools and in different capacities. I'll start what I'm seeing on my Zoom camera. So left to right, Josh, what do you do? What do you do as a teacher?
I'm a math teacher at Liberty High School. I just finished my first year of teaching as an intern teacher. So I was in the credential program at the same time over this last year.
Nice. And so you got into that. You're actually someone who's been in ministry before, right?
Yep. I was a youth pastor part-time for 2.5 years.
Nice. And so that's where Josh and I knew each other at a former church that we both were involved in. So it's cool to see you now involved in education. That's awesome. So you said you were doing an internship. And so for our folks who might not know how that works, because usually what you hear is you not only have to have a bachelor's degree, but also a teaching credential. What is an internship?
An internship is basically where I act as a first year teacher. I teach a full load of classes at the same time that I'm taking credential classes at the university and being supported there.
Nice. So you're doing your day where you're literally doing a teacher's job. It's not like you get to go halfway on that. Like you're doing teacher business. You're there all day, you're grading papers and you're doing that. But then you're studying for a year long credential program that you're then going and doing at nighttime, right? That's the way it works. You're doing a graduate program basically.
Yep. It's pretty crazy. Some days I would be teaching all day and then I would leave right after school, drive out to Hayward for a class until 8:30, get home around 9:30.
Okay. All over. So this must have been really easy though, because you have a stay-at-home wife and she has nothing to do, right?
Yeah.
So what does your wife do actually? Just to give it a little insight on the Call household.
My wife also is a high school teacher. She teaches English over at Freedom, and on April 1st gave birth to our firstborn child.
Yeah. So you had nothing going on in 2020. This was like the easiest year of your life.
Oh, dude, it's been a breeze. Like, come on. I can take the rest of this. No problem.
Lots of video games and just backyard barbecues of people over and stuff.
Yeah. It's been kind of a boring year.
You know? Yeah. Nothing happening. Okay, cool. So definitely a teacher household. So that's awesome. I know my wife is also a teacher, and I worked at Freedom High School for a few years with Brittany, and my wife teaches at Freedom as well. So I know how the teaching households work, where you get home and then that's all you're talking about and stuff. You guys work at different schools at least, so you don't have to talk about the same school. That's interesting. All right. Well, awesome. Josh, thanks for hopping on today. Jolene, tell us about what you do.
So I am an English teacher at Heritage. I teach freshmen and sophomores. I just finished up my 9th year there teaching English.
Nice. So you're teaching, and that's been your only teaching job, right? You've been there since you were a wee baby teacher?
Yeah, I moved to Brentwood because they hired me at Heritage 9 years ago.
Are you from this area? I actually don't know if I know this.
No, I grew up north in Auburn.
Oh, okay.
I went to Chico State and then applied to like 30 different jobs across the state after I graduated and got one offer. And so here I am.
Gosh. And that's the tough one too. Like I know with teachers, it's like history and English are, you just go wherever you can get a job because those jobs don't open up as much. as my wife, who's a history teacher, knows, like her first job was out in Tracy. She's asked to drive there and she did that for 3 years until one in Oakley opened up. Is that what you find where it's just, there's not as much turnaround in those departments?
I mean, I don't know, since I've never,
you've never had a look
at it. You know, since that first time I got hired, I've never gone and looked for another job.
But does your department stay pretty steady at Heritage?
Yeah. I mean, we've had some people retire, a couple people move to other schools, but yeah, it's been pretty consistent for the most part.
Yeah.
And I think when I was looking for a job too, that was back in 2011, there was less of a demand for jobs than maybe there is now. And so I definitely felt the need to not try to be picky about where I was going to go. I think I pretty much applied north of Bakersfield. I didn't want to go to LA. With everything else, I was like, well, and honestly, getting hired at Heritage was a much better gig than I was expecting for a first year teacher.
Nice. That's awesome. So you're also involved in the church. Where are areas that you have served or are, I don't know if you are serving right now because you got your hands full with a few other things. Share real quick. Some of us actually, your husband has been on the podcast before. So most of us know Stephen or he'll lead singing. What else do you do other than having to be a full-time caretaker for Stephen Foster? Because that is a full-time job.
Yes. At the church specifically.
Yeah, the church and at home. Do you have any other things going on?
Yeah, well, we have a two-year-old daughter running around at home. And we have a son who's due to be born in a couple months.
Congratulations.
So Stephen's actually, he's a stay-at-home dad, which makes my life a lot easier. But yeah, he's really involved in the church. We used to serve in Kairos together way back when. That was kind of when I was first here. We were doing that for a number of years. And once our daughter was born, we stepped away from that. And I serve, not recently, but usually Sunday mornings, I'm in the nursery serving during one of the services.
Nice.
And I'm on the very prestigious editing and proofreading team for some of our curriculum.
I think that's a very good team. Anyway, I'm not going to go there. Awesome. Well, thank you, Jolene, for hopping on today. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Julius, how's it going, man? We have two representatives from the high school world, but you are going to be bringing in a different voice here. So where are you involved in as a teacher?
I currently teach at Los Medanos College, LMC, out in Pittsburgh, California.
Nice. How long have you been doing that?
For about as long as Josh has actually been teaching, for one school year.
Nice. So you're recently graduated. You did the master's program at Biola, right? In philosophy. Yeah. So what does Phil call it? The greatest institution in all the land or something like that? He's always, is that actually like a, do they actually have a title like that? The fairest institution in all the land, or is that just something he says?
I would second that. I would say that Phil's underestimating it. I would call it the Harvard of the West.
The Harvard of the West.
Yes.
Wow, that is pretty huge. Okay. and you to think that you got into the Harvard of the West, their graduate school. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So what was your major or what was your degree in the graduate program there?
Philosophy.
Nice. And so what do you teach at Los Medanos?
Philosophy.
Philosophy, good. So you teach, what types of philosophy classes have you taught so far?
So they've given me two types of courses, Intro to Philosophy, Philosophy 100, shameless plug, as well as Critical Thinking, Philosophy 110.
So I'm assuming these are open and people could enroll in these even if they want.
Yes.
Okay.
All three of them are open, no students at all. So
nice.
Please get on that.
All right. Are you at the Pittsburgh campus? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, my first semester they had me at the Brentwood campus, but it looks like at least for the foreseeable future, I'll be at the Pittsburgh campus.
Okay, awesome. And then I was going to say, are these in-person classes or online classes? But I'm assuming everything's online right now.
Yeah, it was in person and then something happened this year.
Yeah, something.
And then, yeah, we all shifted all online around like March 16th.
Okay, got it. Cool. So you've been doing that. And then you were involved in Kairos as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you and Jolene were around at the same time. So you guys knew each other, right?
Yeah. Me, okay. Jolene, Stephen. That was before the days of baby Dakota.
So. Got it. Nice. Well, cool, man. Thanks for jumping on and participating here as well. So let's do this. Let's just share a little bit about what did life look like as a teacher? Like what did a normal week look like? How are you engaging with students? That might be actually an important one because I had a seminary professor once say that I teach for free, but I get paid to grade. That was his thing. Cause it's like, as a teacher, you have a love to actually talk about things and philosophies and engage with people. And it's like, grading is the part that's tough. So Obviously, we know that as teachers, all three of you are going to be in the classroom for your allotted time. What other types of things happened in the normal day in terms of student involvement or anything like that? Just give us a quick snapshot of what just teacher life looked like. Josh, let's start with you as a first year teacher. What did that look like for you?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, I mean, obviously there's the teaching, then there's students who need to come in, just who have questions, or there's just stuff going on in life that they want to talk about. You know, my classroom is always open before school, at lunch, after school. Lots of face-to-face interaction, lots of talking with students, emails and phone calls home are the norm, but, you know, it's just nice being able to go around the campus and, be able to check in and see how everybody's doing. Greeting my students at the door was a big part of my day.
Were you one of those classrooms where kids were like hanging out in there a lot, like before school or at lunch or something like that?
Sometimes. I've only been there for a year, so I don't know that I have quite the reputation yet.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to build that up as much as possible over the next several years.
Nice. Very cool. So your life looked kind of like what normal teacher life looked like, and there's the teachers who maybe are a little more introverts and all that, but I know you personally and you're a big personality guy. So I could see you as someone who's trying to engage with kids and make connections and whatnot.
Oh yeah. I'm always standing outside the door, just shouting at kids I know, making sure they're having a good day and that they're staying safe.
Nice. Awesome. And then aside from that, you're doing staff meetings, you're talking with, you know, as teachers, it's not just teachers and kids, but there's a camaraderie between the people you work with as well. So I'm assuming that you're engaging with them as well.
Oh yeah. All over the place.
Nice. Jolene, same thing for you, or what does teacher life look like over at Heritage?
Yeah. So, I'm definitely one of those introverted teachers, mm-hmm. Which means my job is exhausting for me. I am an early morning person, so I would always get to school really early. I started doing that, honestly, my first year because I was warned about how terrible the traffic was at Awful. Heritage. And then I learned how valuable that time in the morning was just to kind of mentally get my feet on the ground, make sure that I've got everything prepared for the day. If I'm stressed in the morning, like my whole day feels crazy. I get there, I bring my breakfast to work, eat at my classroom, get emails checked, all of that. Teaching throughout the day, I don't make myself available at lunch to my students. I go and have lunch with coworkers and kind of decompress during that time. I'm available for them like in the mornings or after school. My classroom is not one where they generally like hang out a lot. I think because I'm kind of introverted and reserved, I don't know, a lot of students take that as kind of being intimidating. And so even though to look at me, you would think I'm the least scary person in the world, a lot of kids have that fear. I mean, a lot of kids have that fear of all teachers, regardless.
I've always been intimidated by you, but no.
Yeah, thank you.
I think this is interesting because even the way you're sharing that, it's not coming across as you feeling like ashamed or feeling bad by it. You're like, no, I know I'm introverted and I know that I need this time to decompress. And I think it's very important to not have this one standard or model of like how people are this is what it means to be a perfect teacher. It's like, no, this is just what I need because this is the way I'm wired and we're not all wired the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely thrive with the more like intimate groups, you know, if I just have, you know, one or two kids, and there's definitely kids that are like me and I bond with those kids a little bit better just because I think they get me a little bit more. But
nice. Yeah. Are you involved in any clubs or anything or activities on campus?
Not since having a baby.
Okay.
I was involved in various things earlier on and, you know, hopefully someday I'll get back to that. But
yeah,
lately I have felt a burden to set strong boundaries between work and life, which I think is something that's really hard as a teacher. There's this kind of expectation of martyrdom for mm-hmm. teachers of you are going to work yourself senseless for 100 hours a week and it's thankless and your family never gets to see you. And I don't know, I've always felt it important that I love my job and I feel called to it, but my family is more important than my job. And so I try not to take work home on the weekends or at night and really keep those two lives separate. as much as I can.
Well, and this is something that even came up. You said you get to work early. I'm curious, what time do you normally show up to work?
I usually try to leave my house around 7.
Okay.
So, and I have a short commute. I get there usually around between 7:15 and 7:30, depending on the morning. And then our first period starts at 8:15. So I can leave about 45 minutes or an hour.
What time do you normally leave after school?
Between 3:30 and 4.
Okay.
And our last period gets out at 3. So.
Yeah. Josh, I'm curious on this one. Julius is in a different situation altogether. That's why I'm kind of keeping you guys together. Josh, what time do you normally get to school on a normal work day?
It depends. I usually try to get there pretty early. So especially towards the beginning of the year, I would get there around 7:15. I'd leave around the same time. But, you know, depending on how the morning is or how well prepared I am, I might roll in as late as 7:45.
Okay. And then what time would you normally stay after school till?
On days that I had class, I would leave right after. I'd leave around 3:30.
Oh, when you had to do your credential program. Okay.
Getting popped up as quickly as I could. Some days, depending on what the needs are, if I didn't have class, I would try to do some work in my classroom so I didn't have to bring it home. Sometimes a student would come in and need to talk for a while. And so those days I might stay till 4, even a couple of days I was there till 5.
So the reason I asked this is just because being married to a teacher, I know about a thing, and this is, I'm saying this for our audience because they might not know that teachers actually have a thing called contract hours. And so I'm trying to remember it because it's been a few years. Aren't contract hours in the Liberty District something, isn't it like 8 to 3:15? Is that what it is? Do you guys remember?
Yeah. There's like this floating 5 minutes that can be before or after. So 8:10 to 3:15, or you could choose to do an 8:05 to 3:10.
So this is one of the things that our folks need to remember when they're looking at teachers is both of you guys are like, you're literally getting to your job, you know, almost an hour prior to when you're supposed to clock in, and you're staying many days until much later after that. So teaching is one of those professions that it's not like many other jobs where if you're 9 to 5, you don't get to your 9 to 5 job at 8 and hang out until 6 or 7. You're there from 9 to 5. Whereas as a teacher, it's like, no, you're padding that, you're bookending that thing usually with a ton more hours. Yeah. And there's probably seasons where you do even more than that. Right. So just depending on what's going on. Yeah. Cool. Hey, Julius, what would a normal, you're in a different situation because you're an adjunct faculty. So what is that? It's just different than the way a K-12 school would work. What did your position look like in terms of being an adjunct?
Well, for me, a normal school day would be, generally I would get there like maybe an hour or two ahead of time, depending on if the subject I was teaching, how familiar I was with the subject. If it was something that I just knew off the back of my head, sometimes it would be an hour, 30 minutes. And then usually I would draft up some lecture notes. Then I would go in, lecture. And then when the lecture was done, I would hang back after for office hours, which are optional for adjunct professors. You get more money, so most adjunct professors do opt in to have office hours. But students generally tend not to come to office hours. They tend to email us or something like that. Or maybe right after class, they'll ask you a question, but that's few and far between. It's more so emails. But yeah, that's generally what a school day will look like.
Okay. And then how many classes were you teaching last year?
First semester, they gave me one. I think they said legally, since I didn't have any teaching experience at the time, they could only give me one just to see if it will at least sink or float. And then this past semester, they gave me 3.
Okay, nice. And then you said you had 3 again in the coming term, right, in the fall?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So let's kind of getting, we have a grounding for the, it just looked like normal teacher life. And most of us have all been through school who are listening. So we understand, okay, we can understand what school looks like. Starting in January and February, we start hearing about this crazy virus thing that's happened up and around the world. And then all of a sudden in March, there's these rumors that we're going to, you know, are we going to shut down? And then March the 15th, 16th happens. The 16th was a Monday. And that's when California got shut down. Oops, got to turn off my phone. California got shut down. And that's where we went into the shelter in place. You guys have different experiences because I know for Josh and Jolene, you guys were going on spring break that week anyway. So it was kind of like, for the Liberty folks, it was just kind of like, let's wait and see. And we'll talk about that in a second, but let's just stay with Julius. You have a unique situation because you guys weren't going into a spring break and then waiting to see how you were going to return. You guys actually had to stop meeting, right? Like midway. What did that look like?
Well, so the week we heard, again, we were hearing rumors about whether or not we were going to close LMC. At the point that we sheltered in place, we didn't have any confirmed cases at the time, but preemptively the Academic Senate decided to shut down the school the next week. And then they offered some trainings for Zoom, which we got paid for, or so I heard. And then literally the next week, by that Monday, we were online.
Wow. So you like had no time at all. You're having to teach your classes and everything. And on top of that, you're then having to prep to go and become an online teacher and do distance learning, which is like, as someone who teaches classes through the church, teaching online is way different than teaching in person, right?
Yeah. And actually it's funny. Jolene is an introvert. I'm an extrovert. I really love like being in the classroom and interacting firsthand with my students. So it was a little difficult making that transition. Half my students didn't show up anymore to some of the classes. And then even the ones that showed up, their screens were blacked out. And I would say, oh yeah, you guys, what do you think of this? 5 minutes go by. What do you think? And then later when I would start saying names, then people would respond. I was like, oh, you weren't there to begin with. So.
So they're learning how to play the game. They're just going to set up their thing and not set up their Zoom meeting.
It's like, I'm here, but
not, so. Interesting. So did you find that you were getting more class participation in person than you were on Zoom?
You know, I had like a good steady amount of students that showed up for two of my classes until the end of the semester, and they would contribute. I would ask questions and right away they would respond. So yeah.
Okay. And that's difficult. I know as a teacher, it's so difficult. Like I thrive on what's happening in the classroom discussion.
Yeah.
And I know teaching classes, even on Sundays, I get a consistent group of people that are in my classes and I know, and I know how they interact. Once you get on the computers, it's so much more intimidating. And it's like, do I want to go through the process of contributing on a computer? I feel weird. And so it's interesting because that's happening at the college level as well. That's not merely something that adults are dealing with. It's like, man, you were seeing that as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're doing online stuff now. You're preparing that's what LMC is going to be doing in the fall, I'm assuming.
Yeah. All my classes are set to be online. There's going to be some classes where you have to do labs. Like LMC offers these refrigerator repair classes.
Yeah, the HVAC stuff.
And there's like certain science classes that you have to do labs. And for those, I think you have to go on campus, but I think your presence there would be limited.
Got it. So do they have a reentry plan in terms of saying like plan on online, but we're hoping to integrate at some point if it's safe, or do they just say flat out, nope, we are all online all semester?
I don't know. I recall hearing some stuff about next year, but don't quote me on that.
Okay. Interesting. That's tough. Jolene, we'll just kind of snake back up. You were one of the people who were just going on spring break. Mm-hmm. And so I know for me and my wife, we heard about the whole shelter in place for 3 weeks. So we were like, oh, wow. Okay. You're just doing our spring break. And then we have a week off after that. Like, I wonder what that's going to look like. How did that, what was your process like as that started, the shelter in place starting?
Yeah, it was a strange process. I remember a week or two before our spring break, so maybe end of February, early March, one of my students in class raised their hand and said, hey, I heard that campus is going to be closed for the week after spring break. And I said, what? No, where'd you hear that? And they said, oh, this other teacher. And I was like, well, I haven't heard anything about that. No, like that's totally a rumor. Of course, I was later proven wrong. So that
was the student Nostradamus. Okay, probably not. Okay, continue on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that was just, no, that's not going to happen. And then that Friday, which was the 13th, our last day of school, we had this emergency optional staff meeting after school where they said, look, we might be online for, you know, distance learning for a week or so after we return. And that was before the April 6th date came out. So yeah, the whole spring break was weird because shelter in place started right when our spring break began. And we didn't know what to expect. It was nice in the fact that we were hearing about all of this stuff and weren't being directly impacted. I guess in a certain sense, we did have more time to prepare, but also no decisions were being made because things were changing so rapidly on a day-to-day basis that they were putting off making these decisions until the last possible moment.
Which I know that would frustrate a lot of people because you have so many people in the community who are parents saying, what are we planning for our kids? And it made sense why they wouldn't come up with a plan and put it out there, because why put all these plans out there that just have to change and everyone's confused and frustrated? So I get it. It makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But it also limits your ability to prep and plan for it. Yeah. So initially, when we came back, they gave us... So that first week after the spring break was off. And I think the second half of that week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we started having all of the Zoom meetings and started planning for distance learning. That was, I think at that point, was going to last at least until May 1st. I think at least through the month of April, that was going to last.
Yeah.
And then the kids came back that following Monday.
Now for you as someone, I'm curious here, because as someone who's an introvert, what was it like making the shift from, let me ask this, with your classroom experience, how much lecture would you be doing and how much of it would be, going into then group work or individual work? Like, what would a classroom look like for you?
Yeah, I do very little lecturing.
Okay.
I'm, in addition to being an introvert, I'm also not super well spoken, which is a funny trait to have for a teacher. But with English, it's just not very conducive to long lectures. You know, sometimes you have to give notes, but most of my classes, a lot of discussion, group work, partner work, even when we're as a full class, I'm calling on kids and having a conversation with them. So there's very little of me just in front of the class talking at them and them writing things down. I mean, you can't expect freshmen and sophomores to do much of that anyway, very successfully.
Well, so that's an interesting point. So I know that the district made for the Liberty District, they came up with a plan to say, basically each department is going to teach the same thing at the same grade level. So, this might be different in your experience. I know for Shayla, my wife, she teaches world history. And so the world history department would basically be having the same packet of work that all sophomores would do. Is that what you guys did for English as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we had weekly Zoom meetings for each content area. So I had a grade 9 meeting and then a grade 10 meeting early on in the week, and we'd figure out what we were doing. We'd assign different tasks, and then we'd work collectively to put everything together to be ready to post up for the next week.
And then would you offer any kind of office hours or a meeting for students, or how would you communicate with students?
I mostly communicated over email. I did offer, when I sent out all my information at the beginning of all of this, I said, I'm available during these times over the week, but if you want to Zoom with me, you just need to set it up ahead of time. So I didn't do kind of the open office hours that some teachers did, like, I'm going to be on here and jump on if you want to jump on. I said, no, if you want to be on, you need to let me know what you want to talk about, and then we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the quarter, one time, one student wanted to jump on with me and get some clarifications on some stuff. So that's all I ever Zoomed with students.
So what was it like for you as a teacher you're around, you know, if you're teaching three classes a day, you're around like 90 to 100 kids a day. What's it like going from that to like only having interaction with a kid or two in person over the rest of the year?
Yeah. So at first there was like this kind of excitement factor. This year was a tough year for me anyway. I had a lot of challenges in the classroom. I had, you know, those few students that I'm like, I don't know if I can make it to the end of the year with this kid. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, here and now I don't have to make it to the end. So I'm thinking, wow, like I'm not going to have to deal with classroom management. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be worrying if, you know, kids are coming to my class high or if they're vaping in my class, you know, all the other myriad of things that we have to deal with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So there was some excitement at first of like, okay, this is actually going to be like kind of easier. And it was in a lot of ways. Honestly, I worked a lot less mm-hmm. doing distance learning than I did in the classroom. But I quickly learned that all of the good parts of the job were stripped away. Mm-hmm. And I was left with all of the worst parts of the job, mm-hmm. namely grading and answering emails, which isn't always so bad, but the emails were never, hey, I need help on this, understanding this concept. Let's talk about the content of your class. It was always, I can't get this technology to work. I don't understand how to do the assignment. I can't turn in my work. That kind of stuff, the troubleshooting that
tech support
I was having to do, yeah, for the kids. So I did miss the classroom after not too long. And there was a steep learning curve with mm-hmm. distance learning as well, with managing all the online stuff. We had a few missteps with the work that we put out there. And so there were some really stressful situations in the first couple of weeks, and it kind of leveled out after that, fortunately.
Okay. Nice. Josh, how did it work for you as a teacher? Because I know math is its own kind of discipline. It's going to be much different than a discussion-based class like in English or something like that, because you're not going through literature. What would a normal class look like for you? What classes were you teaching in math, by the way?
I've been teaching Algebra 1 and Geometry this year.
Okay.
So mostly freshmen and sophomores. A usual class, would be a warm up, and then I would kind of introduce the topic that we're talking about, some of the new vocabulary and concepts. We'd work with that together. We'd work through some examples together as a class, or students would do it in pairs, and then I'd give them time to work on their own. And I would walk around the classroom and help them out, answer some questions, spend times around the students that I knew kind of needed more help too, and also try to help direct some of the more knowledgeable students to like help the people around them.
So how does that work then in a situation where you're now online? Because I could imagine math being the subject where my wife and I would make the joke how like not all distance learning is created equal, because her experience was similar to yours, Jolene, where it was actually like in many ways really easy, but she was left with all the stuff that she didn't like doing either. So it's very parallel to where she was at. I have friends who are like music teachers or who are just working so much now because it's like, they have a class that is 100% solely meant for performance inside. How do you develop curriculum, right? Or what do you do as an elementary school teacher, right? So for math, I could see it, I'd love to hear your perspective on how did that work? Because that seems one of those classes that you might need to put a little more into.
Right. Well, I think that so the effectiveness of our ability to distance teach relies a lot on the effectiveness of the software that is being used, right? There's a lot of different distance learning softwares. There's a lot of different remote learning software out there. For our math department, we went with Khan Academy. Mm-hmm. So Khan Academy is a popular online platform for a free platform too, for students to be able to watch videos that walk you through, the new concepts, example problems, a lot of the things we would do in class, where there are videos that walk you through it, there are articles explaining the concepts, there's opportunities to practice the problems with some guidance too. So a lot of what I could do in the classroom as a teacher was, shifted. I wasn't having a massive Zoom class with 30 students tuning in. They all were kind of in their own homes, being self-directed into Khan Academy with assignments that, we would get together as a group, the Algebra 1 teachers get together and say, this is what we're going to cover. So we would all set these assignments in Khan Academy so that all of the Algebra 1 classes are doing the same thing. And then a lot of what my work looked like with students was, like Jolene said, a lot of answering student emails, which, generally tends more towards the, hey, I'm going to be getting my work in late. Some really sad ones coming in from students whose families were affected by COVID. Students, it was one of the times that I wish that I could have been there for my students the most, face-to-face students who lost family members to mm-hmm. COVID, students who were trying to take care of family members that were sick, and so they weren't able to do as much work. The times that I really wanted to be able to be there for students was the time that I had to be you know, show my support over email and just extend that, like, this is a tough time for everybody. So that understanding. The rest of our work was very much, like Jolene said, kind of more the difficult, the mundane. Instead of, you know, getting to teach and be up there and enjoying the energy and the flow of information with the students, they were kind of off working on Khan Academy on their own or not. And a lot of what I was doing at home was, you know, just looking at scores and entering grades. And it was kind of some, a lot of just data entry work from there.
Yeah. That's tough to bring in the students and their own personal issues. Cause I know that as someone who has worked at a school and has a wife who works at a school, those conversations will come up every once in a while and you could actually sit down and look someone in the eye. And it's tough for people who have, you know, all of us have worked with, you know, young people, whether it's volunteering in youth ministry or Kairos or whatever. And so to have the opportunity or for the opportunity to be there and to not be able to actually sit down with the person. I mean, that's just like, it's gotta be like a fireman, you know, who's on vacation with his family and sees something happening in the distance and not being able to go help out or something, you know? So it's just gotta be tough because teachers don't get into it to do the minutia, right? Like you guys didn't go to school and get into this profession. Definitely not for the money. It's really because the love of doing the thing and interacting with people. And so when you're only left with doing literally the worst part of the job, it's like, man, this is brutal. This is actually more exhausting.
Yeah. There were a couple times that I would go face to face, a couple students who actually, you know, wanted help with some assignments. So I would get on a Zoom call and help them out with their work, but few and far between. And once we got into the swing of things, most of the communication was just confusion over the grading policy and what that looks like. So,
yeah, I was going to ask, just to jump over to Julius real quick. I know as someone who attended junior college at LMC, so go Mustangs. Wait, Josh, are you a Mustang at all?
No. I am. I'm a Cal Poly Mustang though.
Cal Poly. Okay. You're one of the snobs.
I did go to LMC though too. So
all right.
I'm also checking in.
There you go. We didn't go to the noble University of Chico like Jolene did, who's just known for their upstanding citizenry and, you know, just straight-laced behavior, right?
Yep.
But Julius, I know at the junior college level and even college in general, it's a different environment between students and teachers where you might have that one student you connect with. And then it's very much people who are going there because they need to get your class done in order to transfer. And there could oftentimes just be no relationship there. Did you find yourself having different relationships with students in the fall versus the spring? And did you notice a drop off there? Did you have like those kind of connections or was it a typical college environment where kids are just coming in because they have to get it done?
Well, a lot of students actually seem to be interested in the subject. They all commented on that. The last day of class this semester, I had the bright idea to ask each one of my students, all five of them, well, yeah, it was like 9 or 10 actually. But I asked one of them, was like, what was your favorite section? Like when we were talking about God, epistemology, or ethics. And a lot of them walked away saying that they really liked the class and really challenged their thinking. Hmm. A student of mine from my first semester said that he's now taking more classes in philosophy because of me. So we got one proselyte there.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I think that's tough though at the college level because at a Christian school, it's going to be different. Where you're going, like there's, you know, my professor is actually my brother as well, right? Or my sister. Mm-hmm. But at the college level in a secular school, I think it's just different from an interpersonal standpoint, just by the nature of it. And so that's interesting too, just looking at the different teaching perspectives on you know, how a student views a teacher. And so it'd be interesting to like revisit this in a year or two and see, hey, what is teaching in a college environment like now, once hopefully life gets back together and gets back to normal and seeing, you know, what student involvement could be. As we look to the future though, what are some of the things that you guys think, like, what do you, I can't even say, what do you think education will look like? Because even like right when we hopped on this recording, like the Liberty School District was literally having their board meeting to figure out what the schedule is going to be. So like, we don't even know what the schedule is going to be like starting in a month from now when you guys are in school. Any breaking news that you guys want to report? You guys get text messages from friends on what it is? Nope. Okay. But not so much, what do you think school's going to look like? Because we have no clue what school's going to look like. How do you think teachers are affected and how students are affected? How could we pray for you as teachers, or maybe pray for students? Just kind of opening it up to that side of the equation, like looking forward, like how do we process this and move forward? Do you guys have any ideas or thoughts on that? I don't know who wants to jump in first on that, or if I need to call on you because I'm the teacher. No one's unmuting. We're going to start with Julius. You're unmuted, so we'll start with you.
Prayers for students. Well, there are students, so there was a student of mine that mentioned that when we switched online, he said that he wasn't going to be able to show up to class anymore because he didn't have consistent access to reliable internet. I told him, well, I was going to record the lectures, and I did, but unfortunately, I guess even that was perhaps too much of a hassle for him, so he ended up dropping the class, and I had other students that just stopped showing up because people come from different financial situations. There were students that still showed up, but they didn't have access to a quiet area in their house. And so you would hear like younger siblings, older siblings and stuff like that in the background, parents yelling. So there was definitely some issues with equity. Not everyone was able to had access to the internet as well as access to quiet places. So prayers for that.
I was just going to say, inequity for resources is huge. And even I know in the public schools, they would, or in the K through 12, they would make devices available. Even like some kids don't have a computer at home. And so they were making laptops and those sorts of things available. At the college level, where do you know if there's resources that they were helping students out?
I recall someone saying, some of my coworkers saying something like that. They definitely have that for us as faculty. But I think I remember hearing them saying that they were going to lend laptops to students. Actually, because some students would still drive to the campus and they would just be on their phones in the parking lot. And that's how they would interact.
Got it. Okay. So that would be something even as a church congregation to say, hey, do we know of any college kids, or do I have the resources to help out maybe some of our college kids who might need something in terms of a device? That might be something to contact Pastor Josh McCullers, or you know, to say at the college level, how can we help out our own congregation? If you have the means as a congregant to help out some of our young people, hey, maybe that's something that we need to do and find out where those needs are at. So yeah, that's definitely a good one. What about I mean, you're obviously not the college level is much different than high school. I'm assuming there's not as much collaboration. So were you doing staff meetings or anything like that afterwards?
Yeah, we did.
Or department meetings, I should say.
Yeah, we had. Well, that one was actually mainly done through email. My screen blacked out for probably a minute or two there. Okay. We did that through email. It was just my boss telling me, and my boss, good guy, nice guy. But he just mentioned that we're going to have to switch everything online. And he was just kind of giving us pointers on what to do. But there wasn't really like a staff meeting that I recall.
Yeah. So that's even tough. I would say even like at the college level, you got a lot of professors and teachers, you know, faculty who are almost like lone wolves in a way, where all of you guys, you're so siloed and you have to just do your own thing. And so like we could probably just pray for our teachers at the college level to make sure that they are connected and not, you know, they have the resources and the emotional support, because that's got to be difficult to feel like you're just doing this all yourself. And, you know, especially when you don't have the faculty to go to and the camaraderie of other teachers to be with. Right.
Yeah. I mean, my boss was always very open to me emailing him or asking him questions in person. So there was that, but definitely had this been my first semester, I wouldn't have been as calm perhaps as I was.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Jolien, what do you think? What are some ways that, you know, what are some things, some obstacles or prayer requests or anything that we could say for our students, for our teachers in your context?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways there's similar issues as far as students not having resources, just the emotional toll, like Josh was talking about earlier, on some students. Whether that was directly because of COVID or because now I'm home all day and I have younger siblings and my parents are working from home. And so now I have this dual role of I'm trying to be a student and get my stuff done, but I'm also kind of responsible for my younger siblings and kind of keeping them on track. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a hard question. I think that we've really learned the value of relationship in education. And I think everyone kind of knew that intellectually, like maybe even outside of the profession, but now that that was stripped away from us, just to kind of see the detrimental effects that it's been having, you know, and families are seeing that like, man, my kid is struggling with this. And I mean, partially probably it's because they're having to be self-directed, but yeah, I think that lack of interaction, both on the peer level and with the teacher, is really hard. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what next year is going to look like. I know that there's going to be some aspect of distance. Most likely we're doing some sort of a hybrid in-class and online schedule. And so, I mean, I know for me, that's going to be one of my goals to be better at than I was last year is how can I maintain that connection with students? How can I do more than just here, I'm going to post this assignment and you do it and turn it back into me with kind of no human element to that? Because I think that was really hard for students and teachers alike and their families.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, because as you're talking about next year, so much of our conversation socially has been, when is it appropriate for kids to be in the classroom and kids have have been having less of effect by COVID and all this type of stuff. But you rarely hear the conversation of the teacher and is the teacher ready to go? And like, personally, have you thought about like, hey, I'm ready to go back, or like, it scares me to death, like having a 2-year-old and a one on the way, or like where are you at in terms of even wanting to return to a classroom?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, in some senses, I'm ready. I mean, in any sense, I'm going to be there for a month and then I'm going to be out for 4 months. So, you know, there's kind of a lesser degree of risk maybe in that area. I don't know. And it's one of those really hard things. I was listening to all these public comments being read at the board meeting. And yes, it's true that students' mental health is being negatively affected by all this isolation. And yes, it's also true that their physical health and their families and the teacher's physical health is like a serious risk factor if we do go back. And those two things conflict with one another. And there's no, I think that's why there's no easy answers, you know, because you hear some people pushing for, we need to get kids back in school. They need to be socialized. They need to have direct instruction from teachers. I would say yes. And then on the other hand, there's people saying we cannot risk the health of our community by putting people back in school because it's just too risky, especially right now. Cases are kind of skyrocketing in our area. And I would say yes. And so it's hard to know what the best course of action is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that. Josh, what about, we could actually start with that last question. Have you thought about that, especially being a new dad of a little baby, for you and Brittany? Because, you know, Brittany's, you know, looking at returning to the classroom as well, I'm assuming. Have you guys looked at that saying, you know, is there an anxiety about that, or have you thought about that?
Yeah, there is. Like Jillian was saying, you know, there's been a lot of public comments at the meeting that's, I see, still ongoing. With concerns on both sides, you know, it's the decision that's before a lot of school districts right now is how do we balance the risk to learning and the health risk? You know, we have close to 10,000 students in our high school district alone. Statistically, something's going to happen. And so there needs to be plans in place to address, you know, when things happen or what situations look like. So to that end, I would say that, you know, prayers for wisdom for teachers, for families, for the leaders of school districts is one of the most vital things. Fortunately, Brittany is able to take, Brittany, my wife, is able to take a year of unpaid leave.
Oh, cool. I didn't know you guys did that.
Yeah, yeah. So that was something that, that she was able to do, largely because, I mean, the concern of daycare, you know, is there's a lot of kids who aren't going to be wearing masks. You know, they can't keep their spit inside their mouth. Mm-hmm. So what on earth would that look like to put our daughter in daycare for the next year? So she's going to be at home taking care of her. And yeah, I am concerned about, you know, the health risk of not wanting to bring anything home, to my wife or to my daughter. So that's been something that I've been thinking about. You know, some school districts have options for teachers that are, you know, at risk or live with, you know, high risk people to engage in distance teaching. Whether or not that's an option that our district gives is up to somebody else to decide. But I know that between, you know, the age of some of the teachers in our district, some of the older teachers, and then some of the younger teachers who have children at home, it's something that's on a lot of people's minds.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially I know working at the high school for a few years, there are teachers who are going through cancer treatments or are cancer survivors or have other underlying health causes or health risks that are real thing. So it's interesting because absolutely we need to think about students first, but man, the school system is so much more than just kids. It's teachers and I'm not saying one is more important than the other. It's just, this is what it looks like in this conglomerate. It's all these different types of people of different ages and it takes all of them to make it work. Cause without teachers, you don't have a school, and without students, you don't have a school and all the other workers as well.
And school is just one part of the picture, right? I mean, students and families have lives outside of, you know, the 7 hours that they're at school, you know. People will still get together, will likely still get together and do things outside of the school environment. So even us, we can only do so much to control the spread. Other people have responsibility for their actions outside of, you know, the one environment we're talking about right now.
Absolutely. Well, hey guys, I really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us and, you know, it just, hopefully for our congregation, it gives an insight into, you know, the life of three teachers in different contexts. Obviously you're not indicative of all teachers and it would have been cool to have a round table of like 15 teachers and talk for a long time and get different perspectives. But we appreciate sharing what you guys have experienced and, just knowing how we can pray for our local students and teachers and the leaders. You know, we're commanded to pray for those, you know, governing authorities, right? And while that can mean governors and presidents and that sort of thing, it could also mean, you know, superintendents and principals and those sorts of things, because they're making decisions that are affecting us as well. Even if you don't have kids, this is affecting your community. And so how can we pray for our community? So I just want to say again, thanks guys. Best of luck to you as you teach. And thanks for being involved in our students' lives. Cause it's great to know that whether it's at the high school or at the college level, we have awesome people who love kids who are teaching, and you're not just there for the paycheck. So we thank you for the three of you guys for hanging out today.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Golden Hills Podcast. Please make sure to look up and subscribe to the Golden Hills Podcast in your favorite podcast app like Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. There you'll find previous episodes as well as resources and notes. And of course, you can always find us on the web at www.goldenhills.org. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you join us again next time.
We hope today's episode was a blessing to you. Please make sure to subscribe to the Golden Hills Podcast in your favorite podcast app like Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. And of course, you can always find us on the web at www.goldenhills.org.